Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine a secret code hidden within our very own DNA, a family of genes, so incredibly dynamic it's constantly shape-shifting and rearranging itself, yet for the longest time, its true purpose has remained, well, an absolute mystery. This family, known as the NPIP genes, has been strongly linked to serious conditions like autism, developmental delay, epilepsy, and even obesity.
But here's where it gets truly fascinating and quite the paradox. Despite these apparent downsides and the genomic chaos they seem to cause, these very same genes are also under intense positive selection in humans.
What that means is...
It means evolution is actively favoring their expansion, pushing them forward in our lineage.
Exactly. How can something that contributes to disease also be so central, so favored in our own human evolution? It's like a high-stakes genetic gamble that nature seems to be making.
It really is. And for years, understanding NPIP has been nearly impossible because its structure is so complex and repetitive, tucked away in the most challenging sort of dark matter parts of our genome. Mm-hmm.
This raises the critical question. What powerful adaptive functions could this gene family be providing that truly outweigh its potential for harm?
Right. And finally, there are tools letting us look.
Yes. New tools are finally allowing us to peer into this hidden world, giving us an unprecedented look.
Okay, so today, we're going to deep dive into groundbreaking research that finally begins to untangle this genetic knot. We'll uncover unprecedented details about NPIP's turbulent evolution, its stunning diversity in our genome, and maybe some surprising new insights into what it might actually be doing. Prepare for some aha moments. Mm. And today we celebrate the groundbreaking work of Philip C. Dischuk, Catherine M. Munson, Alexander P. Lewis, Pingsun Chi, Tomi Pestinen, and Evan E. Eichler and their colleagues.
They've truly advanced our understanding of the NPIP gene family, its structural variations, and its role in human evolution and disease. A really significant contribution. Okay, let's unpack this mystery then. The NPIP gene family, sometimes nicknamed Morpheus because it's constantly changing form, it sounds like it's been an incredibly tough nut to crack for geneticists. Why has it been so mysterious to study for so long? Why did it hide its secrets so well?
Well, historically, NPIP has been incredibly challenging to study. It's mainly due to its unique genomic location and structure. It's embedded deep within what we call segmental duplications.
Segmental duplications. Remind us what those are.
Sure. They're large, nearly identical blocks of DNA that have been copied and pasted many times across our genome. Imagine trying to find a specific phrase in a book where, like, every other sentence is virtually identical.
Okay, so standard sequencing wouldn't work well there.
Exactly. Standard short-read sequencing methods, like those used for the initial human genome project, simply couldn't distinguish between individual NPIP copies. They just get lost. It often led to misassemblies, leaving us with a very incomplete picture.
So the map was wrong, basically.
In many ways, yes. For example, the GRCH38 human reference genome, which is, you know, a cornerstone of human genetics, it only showed 24 NPIP copies. But we strongly suspected there were many more, often 20 to 30 copies per human haplotype.
And a haplotype is?
That's essentially one of the two sets of chromosomes you inherit, one from your mom, one from your dad. Mm. So we're talking maybe 40 to 60 copies per person, not just 24.
Wow. So it's not just some obscure, difficult to study gene. It's deeply intertwined with our unique human biology. Why is it so important for us to finally understand these genes if they're so difficult to even map out?
Well, what's truly fascinating here is that NPIP is not just some obscure genetic curiosity. It's what we call a core duplicon, mm-hmm. meaning it's a foundational genetic unit that has independently duplicated multiple times throughout primate evolution, especially in us, in African apes. And these duplications, they're prone to instability. They act as hotspots, almost like weak points in the genome for recurrent microduplication and microdeletion syndromes. And these aren't minor issues. These are significant genomic disorders associated with serious conditions like neurodevelopmental delay, including common forms of autism, epilepsy, and even obesity.
So it's directly linked to disease.
Yes. But the fact that it's undergone such rapid expansion and shows strong signs of positive selection, meaning it's being actively shaped by evolution, as we mentioned, strongly suggests an important, albeit still unknown, adaptive function. It's a biological enigma, it clearly plays a significant high-stakes role in human biology, for better or perhaps for worse.
That's a powerful enigma indeed. So, if traditional methods kept hitting a brick wall trying to map this sheer complexity and repetitive nature, how did this team finally manage to get a clear, comprehensive picture of NPIP? What new tools did they bring to the table?
They really leveraged a powerful suite of cutting-edge genomic technologies to crack the NPIP code. First, and this was key, they moved beyond relying on just a single human reference genome. That was a major limitation before.
Right, because one map wasn't enough.
Exactly. Instead, they utilized long-read assemblies, which, as the name suggests, read much longer stretches of DNA than traditional methods, from 169 different human haplotypes. These came from big projects like the Human Pangenome Reference Consortium.
So many different human maps.
Precisely. This effectively allowed them to build a pangenome specifically for NPIP. Think of it not as one map, but as hundreds of individual maps combined. This gives a much broader and more accurate representation of NPIP's diversity across the entire human population.
Okay.
This approach was absolutely critical. It enabled them to resolve the extreme variation in NPIP loci and ultimately identify over 4,600 copies of these genes across those haplotypes. We call these copies paralogs, individual copies of a gene that originated from a duplication event within the same genome.
4,600. That's a massive leap forward from the, 24 in the old reference?
A huge leap. It just shows the scale of what we were missing.
That's incredible, just mapping them all out. But how did they then figure out what these genes are actually doing? Especially since, as you said, many of them are so incredibly similar in sequence.
Right.
How do you disentangle their unique functions?
Right, that's the next big challenge. For those crucial functional insights, they turned to long-read RNA sequencing, specifically a technology called ISOSIC.
ISOSIC, how does that help?
It's incredibly powerful because it provides full-length cDNA transcripts. Unlike short-read methods that give you tiny snippets of the RNA message, ISOSEC gives you the complete end-to-end picture of gene activity. It shows exactly what messenger RNA is being produced by the cell.
So you see the whole instruction sheet, not just fragments.
Precisely. And they gathered an astonishing 1.4 billion ISOSEC reads from 101 different human tissue and cell types. This massive data set allowed them to unambiguously assign transcripts back to specific NPIP paralogs, even the very similar ones. This was absolutely critical for building accurate gene models, the blueprints for the proteins, and really, for the first time, estimating their tissue-specific expression patterns, telling us where and when these different NPIP genes are active in the body.
And what about tracing its turbulent evolutionary journey? How did they figure out how it became this complex and dynamic family?
To reconstruct NPIP's evolutionary history, they employed sophisticated phylogenetic methods, basically building family trees for the genes, and combined that with population-level selection tests.
Like the ones you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. Tools like Tajima's-D and NSL were crucial here. You can think of these as sophisticated genetic detectors sniffing out rapid changes in gene frequencies that suggest natural selection is strongly at play. They're robust for detecting ongoing positive selection, even in these notoriously complex duplicated regions.
So they can see evolution happening now.
In a sense, yes. They detect the signatures it leaves behind. And they didn't just stop at the genetic code, they pushed the boundaries further. They used computational protein structure prediction to visualize what these newly discovered NPIP proteins might actually look like.
So building 3D models based on the sequence.
Exactly. Providing a glimpse into their potential shapes and functional mechanisms, something we could really only guess at before.
This combination of techniques sounds incredibly powerful. It must have revealed a real treasure trove of information about NPIP. What were some of the most impactful results they uncovered about its structure and how it varies?
Well, the first major finding was just the sheer scale of NPIP's structural variation, both between species and within humans. To put it in perspective, as we said, the macaque genome has only a single NPIP copy.
Just one.
Just one. Compare that to the latest T2T-CHM13 human reference genome. That's a very complete, high-quality genome, which boasts 27 copies. 26 are located on chromosome 16, and one snuck over onto chromosome 18.
Okay, 27 in that reference. But what about across people?
Looking across the broader human population, using that pangenome data, the haploid copy number, the number of copies on a single set of chromosomes ranges significantly, from 21 all the way up to 33 copies.
So quite a bit of variation between individuals.
A lot. And notably, they observe significantly higher copy numbers on average in individuals of African descent. This demographic insight alone is quite telling, suggesting recent rapid evolutionary changes happening differently in different populations.
So it's not just about the number of copies, as you mentioned, instability. It's also about how these copies are arranged, how they interact, and maybe how they rearrange themselves. That sounds dynamic.
Exactly. That's where the real dynamism comes in. It's almost like a constantly shifting puzzle. They found frequent interlocus gene conversion, IGC.
Gene conversion.
Yeah.
What's that exactly?
It's a bit like imagine sections of a novel constantly being copied and pasted between slightly different versions of the same book. It leads to rapid mixing and matching of genetic information between different NPIP copies, homogenizing some parts while diversifying others.
Okay, so they swap bits of sequence.
Right. And this was happening a lot in over 50% of the haplotypes they looked at. It created six distinct IGC hotspots on the short arm of chromosome 16, places where this swapping is particularly common.
And the worrying part.
What's particularly striking, and frankly a bit unsettling, is that these hotspots eerily coincide with the known breakpoints of disease-associated microdeletion and microduplication syndromes we mentioned earlier.
So the swapping mechanism might be linked to causing those disorders.
It strongly suggests the link, yes. It points to the inherent instability. And beyond that, they identify four large-scale inversion polymorphisms on chromosome 16p. These are big chunks of DNA ranging from 350,000 base pairs up to a massive 1.6 million base pairs, where the whole segment containing NPIP genes is flipped backwards.
Flipped, like the gene order is reversed.
Exactly. And these inversions are actually common in the human population. They also coincide with NPIP loci, again highlighting the gene family's significant role in creating genomic instability. It's a truly, well, chaotic region of our genome.
So this instability is a constant presence, causing all these rearrangements and maybe even disease. But you also mentioned earlier those strong signals of positive selection. Is evolution still actively shaping these genes? Despite, or maybe because of this instability, it really sounds like nature is playing with fire.
Yes, strikingly so. The study confirmed very strong signals of ongoing positive selection in the human population. Specifically, two paralogs called NPI-PB9 and B15, they ranked within the top 1% of the most extreme values for both Tajima's-D and NSL tests on chromosome 16.
Top 1%. That sounds significant.
It's highly significant. When specific genes hit the top 1% on these tests, it's like a flashing red light saying evolution is working hard on these specific copies. These are robust indicators of strong recent selective sweeps, meaning these particular gene copies are being rapidly favored by natural selection spreading through the population.
Wow. And it wasn't just those two.
No. What's more, nine other NTIP paralogs also showed significant signs of positive selection, ranking within the top 5%. This really suggests that despite the inherent genomic instability that NPIP introduces, certain copies are providing a crucial adaptive advantage that evolution is actively promoting.
It's a classic evolutionary trade-off playing out right there.
Absolutely. Risk and reward coded into our DNA.
And what about the individual genes themselves?
Right.
With those advanced long-read sequencing methods, did they find new details about their actual structure, what proteins they produce? Did they finally reveal their blueprint?
This is truly where the long-read RNA sequencing, the ISOSEC, really shone a spotlight. Get this. They identified a remarkable 56% of NPIP protein models that had never been reported before.
Over half were new.
Yes. That's 31 out of 55 of the most abundant protein forms or isoforms. This is huge. It essentially doubled our known catalog of potential NPIP proteins overnight.
Incredible. And are these functional?
Well, most paralogs seem to maintain full-length open reading frames, ORFs, which essentially means their genetic code has the complete instructions to make a functional working protein, not just a truncated or broken piece. But they also discovered some remarkable new features.
Like what?
For instance, some NPIT subfamilies gained entirely new start sequences, the bit that tells the cell, start making protein here. One was co-opted, basically borrowed, from another nearby gene called ACSM1. Another was a totally novel sequence they called MRLR.
MRLR.
Yes, and this MRLR sequence acts as a signal peptide. That's like a cellular zip code directing the protein where to go within or outside the cell. And here's the kicker. This MRLR sequence appears to be human-specific. It evolved only about 2.6 million years ago.
So relatively recently in evolutionary terms?
Very recently. This isn't just a minor tweak. It suggests a profound re-engineering of the protein, hinting at an entirely new cellular job for some NPIP copies that evolution has been actively experimenting with, specifically in the human lineage.
Wow. Any other structural surprises?
Yes, another fascinating one. Other NPIP paralogs developed an expanded in-frame variable number tandem repeat, or VNTR. This is a repetitive section within the gene. And based on predictions, this VNTR is thought to form a specific protein structure called a left-handed beta helix.
A beta helix. That sounds like a major structural change.
It is. It creates a completely new shape for that part of the protein. And again, this structural innovation also appears to be human-specific, arising maybe 3.1 million years ago. Think of it as fundamentally changing the protein's architecture, giving it totally new functional possibilities.
So new shapes, new start signals,
yeah.
Anything else?
They even found 10 distinct fusion transcripts. This is where an NPIP gene actually merged with bits of neighboring pseudogenes, old broken copies of another gene called PKD1.
Fused together. Do they work?
That's the question. They seem to maintain long, functional-looking ORFs, suggesting they can make a combined protein. But their precise role is still unknown. It's another layer of complexity.
And finally, did they find out where in the body these different copies are active?
Yes. The ISOSEC data gave clear, paralog-specific tissue expression patterns. Some paralogs, like NPIPA1 and B12B13, are enriched in the fetal or adult brain.
Brain-specific ones. Interesting, given the links to neurodevelopmental conditions.
Exactly. Strongly suggesting potential roles in neurodevelopment or cognitive function. Others, such as B69 and B15, remember, B15 had strong selection signals maintain an ancestral pattern of being highly expressed in the testes, and remarkably, this expression increases after puberty.
Testes and brain, often hotspots for evolutionary innovation.
They are indeed, and even immune-related tissues showed increased expression for certain NTIP copies. It truly paints a picture of a gene family that hasn't just expanded, but has diversified with rapidly evolving specific roles across our body.
So what does this all mean for us then, for understanding maybe what makes us human? We have this gene family that's unequivocally linked to diseases, that's incredibly dynamic, unstable, almost chaotic, and yet evolution seems to be actively pushing it forward, selecting for certain copies. This sounds like the ultimate evolutionary trade-off.
I think that's exactly right. If you connect all these dots, it strongly supports the idea of a profound evolutionary trade-off. The persistence and expansion of NPIP, despite its clear association with neurodevelopmental disorders, really implies there must be an underlying adaptive function that is powerful enough for evolution to select for it.
The benefits outweigh the risks somehow.
Potentially, yes. And these dynamic changes we've discussed, the copy number variation, the evolution of entirely new gene models with things like the MRLR sequence or the beta helix or their distinct expression patterns, these are textbook examples of what we call neofunctionalization.
Meaning new functions.
Exactly. Where duplicated genes acquire entirely new functions that weren't present in their ancestors. For instance, the paralogs showing the strongest signals of positive selection, like B15 in the testes and B12, B13 in the brain, have also evolved these radically distinct gene models and protein structures.
Ah, so the ones being selected for are also the ones that change the most.
That's a key finding. And what's also noteworthy is that these specific paralogs, the ones under selection, are among the few NPIP copies that are sometimes found duplicated in people, but they are never found completely deleted.
Never deleted.
Never observed to be deleted in the large population data sets they studied. This strongly suggests that losing these specific copies is actually highly detrimental to our biology. It's like evolution made a bet, doubled down on these particular NPIP copies, and now we can't afford to lose them.
It's clear this opens up a huge area for future research. I mean, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But with such extreme complexity and dynamism, I imagine there's always a but or a what's next.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any lingering ambiguities, pieces of the puzzle that still eluded them? And what are the immediate next steps?
Oh, absolutely. The ultimate puzzle that remains, the elephant in the room really is, what exactly is the function of NPIP? What is this adaptive advantage? That, surprisingly, is still largely a mystery.
Still unknown.
Largely speculative. There are suggestions, maybe interactions with nuclear pore complexes or roles in visual acuity based on some older limited data, but solid functional characterization is urgently needed. We need to know what these proteins do.
And validating the new discoveries.
Yes. Current proteomic data looking directly at proteins is sparse for NPIP. So validating these new gene models at the protein level, especially things like the fusion genes or those unique beta helix structures, is absolutely crucial. We need to see if those predicted proteins actually exist and what they look like.
Any other challenges?
Well, even with long reads, assigning all RNA transcripts back to their specific paralog of origin remains challenging, because some copies are perfectly identical over long stretches, and there's all that gene conversion mixing things up.
Right, the copying and pasting makes it tricky.
It does. Future resources, perhaps projects with matched DNA and RNA data from the same individuals, like the somatic mosaicism across human tissues project, could help pin this down more accurately.
And connecting it back to disease and traits.
Ultimately, yes. Connecting this huge variation copy number, inversions, specific paralogs to specific human phenotypes, including diseases, but maybe also normal variation, will be key. Though it's possible that many of the observed genomic disorders associated with this region are actually due to dosage changes in the unique genes flanking NPIP, not NPIP itself. The instability NPIP causes might affect its neighbors.
So NPIP could be the cause of the instability, but not the direct cause of the disease phenotype itself in some cases.
Exactly. That needs untangling. Identifying individuals with specific mutations or variations only within certain NPIP copies, perhaps using more long read sequencing in large cohorts, will be a powerful tool for these future studies. The NPIP family is still a deep frontier. So I think the take-home message is really that the NPIP gene family is an exceptionally dynamic and rapidly evolving part of the human genome. It's undergoing massive structural changes and diversification just within our lineage. And despite its known associations with neurodevelopmental disorders, the strong signals of ongoing positive selection, plus the discovery of all these novel paralog-specific gene models, really point to an as yet unknown but important adaptive role in human evolution, particularly evident perhaps in brain and testis tissues.
What does this mean for our understanding of what makes us uniquely human? And how does this constant tug of war between disease susceptibility and evolutionary advantage shape our genome? It truly makes you wonder what other secrets are, you know, our junk DNA or these complex regions are holding, doesn't it? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.